Miss Effin' Daisy.
And which film did you have in 1989?
Do the Right Thing. That film's being taught in colleges, schools, all over. No one's watching Miss Dry, Miss Daisy now. So it also shows you that the work is what's important, because that's the stuff that's going to stand for years. Not an award, not whether it be a Grammy, a Tony, or whatnot.
So even if you don't get the Oscar, there is some success, but there's still a huge problem in the whole studio system.
From top to bottom.
That was Spike Lee being interviewed by George Stephanopoulos on ABC. We were at Sundance. We interviewed Dawn Porter, the documentarian Stanley Nelson. They're both supporting a boycott. Spike Lee's just not going. Mm-hmm. Your response to all of this?
There's a lot of wisdom in all of that. You know, this is personal. This is not, you know, a grand political statement. I appreciate not using the terminology boycott and going for the, listen, do you, I'm staying home. Just out of, you know, personal pride, I'm just going to stay home. I just don't have to stand for that. And I think he's, you know, exactly right. Because what he was pointing to when he was talking about, you know, being in the room with systemic issues. In other words, by the time you get to, and you know, you begin to see formulas across, you know, the whole, you know, the entire system in terms of racism. And one of the things is people shout and everybody gets upset by the time you get to the end result, which in this case is the Oscars. But what Spike is saying, it's like five other things that happened before that.
Acclaimed writer Ta-Nehisi Coates, to see part one of our conversation with the author of Between the World and Me, the National Book Award winner, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Special thanks to Renee Feltz, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Mike Burke. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8 a.m. Time for Positively Revolting Talk Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the screening of Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point, Saturday, February 13th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Fix It is a documentary that delves deeply into the faults of the current healthcare crisis and proposes a single-payer system as a solution. Again, the screening of Fix It will be Saturday, February 13th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Holding On to the Sky, February 5th through 7th and 12th through 14th. 8 p.m. at the Peninsula Odd Fellows Lodge in Portland. Holding On to the Sky is an original play about earthquake preparedness, which weaves together stories of disaster, gentrification, health access, addiction, recovery, and resilience. Again, that's Holding On to the Sky, February 5th through 7th and 12th through 14th, 8 p.m. at the Peninsula Odd Fellows Lodge, 4834 North Lombard Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Break our legs, and we say thank you, and the offer is
And good morning. It's about 5 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are listening to Positively Revolting Talk Radio here on your very own community radio station. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And here we are talking about oh so many things, really. This morning, fairly wide open in what we invite you to call in with because, well, so many topics are...
There's a lot going on, as they say.
Interwoven. And by its very nature, because what we wanted to really look at this morning is sort of that single issue politic versus actual complexity that make up our lives, the complexities in which we swim daily. We are more than one thing, right? That would apply for every one of us listening. We are human, okay. We are, well, I am white, I am a woman, I'm queer, I'm raised working class. All of these things factor in to my lived experience. Not just one of them. I cannot say I as a queer person, only care about queer issues because I'm leaving out, well, the fact that queers come in every race, queers come in all genders, queers come in all classes, queers are homeless, queers are, you know, wealthy, you know, all of this. It's that, to me, is one of the communities where we can really check out intersectionality and how all of these things add into our identities, which is why we need to be complex as we check out political happenings, kind of like the presidential campaign that's whirling around us at this very moment. So that's a little taste as we look at how all of these factors interrelate as we check out the world around us. And we also wanted to note the media coverage of this campaign and the debacle of the mainstream media in its sexism, in its establishmentarianism, in its, well, all of its manufacturing of consent grandeur.
So, and if it bleeds, it leads. And certain candidates bleed more than others, apparently, so they get to lead the... And they're always about the race. No content, policies, no finding out what that person actually stands for. It's the race. It's the horse race that they like.
You're going to bet on the winning team or not?
What are you going to do? The other part, of course, that we're talking about the intersectionality, because I have been, it's been interesting to watch the position that women are in for this election period. We are being told by some folks that there's a place in hell for you if you do not vote for a particular woman candidate, which, by the way, there are more than one. There is Jill Stein is there's not just Hillary Clinton. Jill Stein is also running for the Green Party as she did before on the last election.
And there may be others.
So I looked, and Rasmussen Reports, which is a national telephone survey, finds that only 4% of likely U.S. voters believe it's more important for women to vote for a woman candidate because she is a woman. 91% disagree with and place more importance on where the woman candidate stands on issues. Nice to know I didn't know anybody else was thinking out there if I'm listening to the mainstream media at all. Women are even more emphatic, this article says, about that than men. 92% of the women voters say it's more important, and just 4% say it's more important to vote for her because she is a woman than where she stands on issues. Voters are divided evenly when asked if they would choose, if given two candidates, one man, the other a woman, and all other things being equal. 29% say the man, another 29% say the woman, and a whopping 42% are undecided. And I thought that was kind of interesting and a little surprising to me.
So I want to actually take a moment and refresh people, because sometimes we're talking to people who maybe a lot younger and may not have lived through this quote that is burned into my brain forever.
Which one is that? What quote is that?
Well, that's the one that we're going to ask Kristen to hit play for. The little backup on this is Madeleine Albright being interviewed on 60 Minutes, in the early 90s.
We have heard that 500,000 children have died. I mean, that's more children than died in Hiroshima. And you know, is the price worth it?
I think this is a very hard choice, but we think the price is worth it.
Thank you, Madeleine Albright. 500,000 dead Iraqi children.
Apparently none of them were women.
Worth it. Special place in hell for women that don't vote for women, but women that kill half a million Iraqi kids through economic sanctions. Okay. I'm stunned. I'm horrified. That is, I have to say, somebody, if I'm ever endorsed by Madeleine Albright and other things I'll never have to worry about, I think that would be the time that I would just drop out of politics altogether. That, I mean, oh my. Oh my God.
What would make you drop into politics?
Yeah, well, there's, again, not a big worry out there that, yeah.
And we want to make very clear also that we are not endorsing any candidates whatsoever.
I am opposing Madeleine Albright.
Absolutely. No problem there.
Yeah, right? We are not endorsing. We are not opposing. We cannot do that as hosts of this show. But there we do think it's really important to look at the issues. And I got to say, the issues are starting to come out. It's still not really what leads in the mainstream media, but it is... in the debates, I gotta say, I'm hearing more about Wall Street. I'm hearing more talk of change in populism than I have heard before. And that is something that I do find, I take some heart in. I take some heart in that issues are coming into living rooms being discussed in presidential debates that frankly usually just get glossed over and actually not talked about at all. Now, the substance of the talking on those issues, like are the candidates actually really saying anything or is it a lot of words strung together, that's still open to interpretation.
Or in Trump's case, no sentences.
It's true.
No actual sense.
Yeah, it's true.
We didn't weep.
Yeah, it's true. But, yeah.
I don't mean to digress. I just want people to know that we are going to open up the phone lines early this morning because this is something that needs to be a public forum, and we want to hear what you have to say about that. 503-231-8187. And we'd love to hear from more women than we have been hearing from lately. But we welcome all calls this morning, 503-231-8187. How do you feel about the lack of issues? Women's candidates, are they people we should vote for no matter what? Just because...
Women, for them or against them?
Well, no, I have had people say it's a radical idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen people go, but I want a woman in the White House. And
I got to say, I think that would be cool.
All things being equal,
I think that would be cool. In 1984, the first presidential election that I was able to vote in, I voted for Mondale Ferraro because, oh my God, I could not imagine that the year I turned 18, there was a nationally recognized woman candidate running for, if not the very top office, the secondary office, and I was thrilled to be able to cast the very first vote that I was able to cast. Birthdays in July, wasn't able to do the primaries, so there I am, presidential election, first time out of the chute, I'm voting. And I was thrilled to be able to vote for Ferraro. And I didn't really look at what she was espousing. I really didn't. Now, I've got a little more savvy, a little more experience. I'm no longer 18. And so what does it mean to want somebody who looks like me in the White House? I think that representation is cool. I would like to see women widely represented throughout all levels of government. But is being a woman enough? Because Margaret Thatcher was a woman. And I have to admit, I had a party when she died. I did. It was a big party.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, you came. I had a party when Ronald Reagan died, too. I have bad taste. It's true. I am not always appropriate. But, you know, again, I want to put it out there. People have very strong feelings, and it's very polarized. And I find that fascinating. So, any woman? Or, you know, do the issues actually matter? Where are the issues? Where do the candidates that you're backing or not backing stand on what issues? I want to invite that kind of debate. And I want to invite it with a good feminist analysis. Because, frankly, I find that missing in most coverage, right? And that's what Lynn and I can, you know, help to provide. But so can you, dear listeners, to 503-231-8187. You can also follow along on Twitter. You can find us there at Positive Revolt. You can also find us on Facebook, where we are Positively Revolting. Facebook.com/Positively Revolting. All right, so let's go ahead and talk to you, listeners. Good morning, Lance. You're on the air.
Good morning, Ani and Lynn. I'm not a feminist. I'm a humanist. And as far as I'm concerned, Hillary Clinton should be a lame duck president right now, if we all remember when she was running, when Obama came out of nowhere. And I knew she would have been a shoo-in to the presidency when she ran 8 years ago. And as a person who tries to pay attention to what's going on, I figure, well, she's an insider. You know, she knows what's going on. And both her and her husband, they appear to have been a sideswiped when this whole thing happened, because this was when everything went down in the South Carolina in the primaries. And Obama came out of nowhere, literally. And I'm going, who is Obama? What's his background? You know.
Well, he was a senator from Illinois.
He wasn't in the seat long enough to keep it warm. You know, it's not like true. He was an experienced senator. You know, he went from one place to one place to one place. Now, I'm not knocking any of this. All I'm saying is that these are issues that can be used as a splinter to divide and conquer. Unfortunately, the feminists are obsessed with seeing a woman in the White House. Racial activists are obsessed with seeing a black person in the White House. Every other group out there wants to project themselves in the White House, not realizing that it's possible that they're just puppets, mm-hmm. and they're not really looking at the person, you know, and the person to me, I mean, I hate to sound naive, you know, but I figure it's the person that transcends their sex. You know, I mean, a woman can have just as much character as a man. And she has the character and the backbone. By all means, give it to her. Let her be captain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just unfortunately our politics has become so convoluted in this country to where there are people in power who says, okay, everyone wants to project their person in the White House. So, okay, let the women have it. Just make sure we put our woman in there.
Uh-huh.
You know,
uh-huh.
So I felt that way about Obama, and I took a lot of flack from the other African Americans. I said, you know, he's cool. The only reason why I really like him is because of Michelle. If it wasn't for him, that you know, which we're right back to feminism again.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I guess in a way, you know, if it wasn't for Michelle, I would have said, man, just write him off. You know,
Lance, I absolutely agree with everything you're saying. In fact, what you're saying is why we are doing this show this morning, because in fact, you know, just having somebody that looks like you in the White House does not mean that we have actually achieved much, right?
No, it's all illusion. It's
exactly.
All illusion. Everyone is sleight of hand, and it fascinates me how we're going forward into this future, this unknown future, and we're still being led astray with this carrot at the end of, or at least this carrot that looks like us at the end of this stick, and no one's bothering to question anything. So I don't want to hold up any more of your airtime insofar as, yes, please appeal to more women. More women to call in and to give their point of view, because I mean, not much. I try not to get too caught up in the factions. And you said something at the beginning of your show that was interesting, and it sounded like, okay, we all have our different numerators. Now let's look into the common denominator here. What is it that we're all struggling with that we can all say that we're struggling with that's similar?
Mm-hmm.
So I won't take any more of your airtime.
Well, thank you for your comments, Lance.
Thanks
for calling in.
Thanks. And it reminds me of one of my favorite bumper stickers that I've had pinned to my office wall for some 15 years now, and that is, voting is as close to political power as sitting in the back of a police car is to being a cop. So I'm just going to leave that right about there. That's pretty much what I think about national elections in general. I got to say, I'm finding this election interesting. I'm finding it interesting. And that's about as far as I think I'm going to say. Good morning. Let's talk to Bijan. Good morning, Bijan. You're on the air.
Hello. I am.
Speak up a little bit, dear.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, but still speak up a little bit.
Okay. So I am an Iranian man. I would consider myself a feminist, though I'm always yearning to learn more about feminism.
Aren't we all?
Yes. And I have a lot of sympathy with the Black Lives Matter movement. But I want to ask, when do we make that connection of the system of oppression with our people of color in America to international relations? Do brown lives matter in the Middle East?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I really thought it was fascinating that Bernie Sanders went all the way back to Mossadegh in Iran in 1953 and said, this is why we have the problems that we have in the Middle East, because we are imperialist foreign policy is creating all this these problems, you know.
And that's not something that we've heard politicians bring up, mainstream politicians bring up in the past. I found that interesting.
You know, I was kind of, I've always been more democratic socialist. I've volunteered with the Green Party in Ohio, where I'm from, you know, a lot of good stuff. But when the 2012 campaign in 2008, I was listening very closely to Ron Paul and his foreign policy, because he did the same thing. But I don't agree with his economics, but I was willing to vote for him for his foreign policy. It's so important that we don't elect another imperialist. And I just, you know, at what point do we say that the brown lives, you know, in the Middle East, do they matter? You know, Ted Cruz talks about making the sand glow. Donald Trump talks about bombing women and children and the families of terrorists. Barack Obama, person of color, right?
Yeah.
H.R. 158, if you look into that, it's discriminatory against people of Middle Eastern heritage.
Drones over Pakistan.
And Iran, who,
yes.
If you look at where all the terrorism is actually coming from, it's from our ally, Saudi Arabia, our quote-unquote ally. So I'm just...
And for people that might not know... be so familiar with H.R. 158. That is it's a House bill that's about immigration, right? It's the Nationality Immigration Act that's actually discriminating against folks from the Middle East. Am I remembering that right?
Yes. I'm a little flustered and in tears when I hear, like, I'm literally have tears rolling down my cheeks when I hear that Madeleine Albright quote. I'm just so angry and appalled. And I thought it was really great that he talked about Henry Kissinger, and I'd like to hear in the debate that quote about Madeleine Albright be brought up, because I, that's where the ideology of the elites, that's how they feel about, you know, poor people over internationally, you know,
and not
yeah, here, but yeah, you know, it's worth it. It's worth it for 500,000 children to starve to death.
Yeah.
I have to hang up before I go further because I'm just so angry.
Hey,
right,
Bijan,
now.
Thank you very much for your call this morning.
Use your anger well.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. And you're, I mean, holy bejeebus, to the arrogance, the inhumanity, the outright evil of the statement that 500,000 dead children is worth
what
it, whatever it is. Oh, I know what it was. American superiority. No, in fact, and that's the thing, you know, with when you start looking at American foreign policy and frankly American domestic policy, it clearly shows a history of viewing some people as absolutely expendable, right? And generally black and brown people at home and abroad. And you can add to that poor whites and anyone with disabilities when you're looking at home, okay? And yeah, we need a new politic. We need actual radical analysis, and we need to actually start learning how to work in solidarity with each other's struggles. Because when it comes to the struggle for liberation, when it comes to the struggle and work for social justice, all struggles are interrelated. You know, as our first caller pointed out, as he said, he's a humanist because, you know, you cannot just be one of anything, and we look at our common denominator. I can go for that. I I've heard that argument. I believe that argument. It's an interesting thing. Let's move on, shall we? Let's 503-231-8187, the number to call. Bases are loaded. Please do keep on calling in. We love hearing from you. Good morning, Francis.
Hi.
Hi.
I too am tired of the media production of the race and not dealing with any issues, really.
But we sure hear a lot about hairstyles and and if people are electable.
Right.
That's my favorite.
Right.
Are they electable?
Well, that's because you want to be a winner, baby. Don't you want to be a winner, Frances?
Having been, I am.
Yes, you are.
Having been a child of the 60s and being fully aware of the history, recent history of this country, Bernie Sanders is a catalyst. He's bringing up issues and bringing us to discussions that we've not had recently, as your last caller just said, that we have refused to talk about. One thing about Madeleine Albright, you just mentioned the one thing that I also remember that statement and was totally appalled at the time. And for her to suggest that because women aren't supporting Hillary Clinton, that they belong in that special place in hell that she refers to, her quote was, there's a special place in hell for women who don't support each other.
Yeah.
Now, all those 500,000 children in Iraq have mamas.
Uh-huh.
And she did not support any of them, apparently. So that place in hell is a good spot for her, I would suggest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also,
when you point the finger at somebody else, you have three pointing back at yourself.
Correct.
And my favorite teacher told me, and it's true.
When Gloria Steinem made the comment that the girls were, the young women who are majority supporting Bernie Sanders, well, you know, the girls just go where the boys are.
She put her foot right in her mouth with that one.
I was appalled.
Many people were.
That is totally against anything that feminism has been trying to teach in the last 50 years about women's intelligence and the fact that they have a right to choose what they think and, you know, all that. And my daughter-in-law, who recently became an American citizen, she's from Mexico, found this picture, and she made it her Facebook page, profile picture. And it's a young, young, young photo of Bernie Sanders, and it's just something like, hey, girl, want to date a revolutionary? You know, and it's just, it's just hilarious, because she hit it on the mark, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She is learning a lot about our politics, and a lot of young women that I have talked to are amazed at how we're ignoring the issues. When Gaddafi was killed, and apparently on a segment just before your show in Democracy Now!, there was a professor who spoke about how Hillary has been part of the regime change policies of our government, you know, with Iraq and now Syria, which has become just a terrible, terrible, terrible situation for all the people there, and Libya. There's refugees trying to leave Libya. We left Libya in a total, total disarray and just terrible for people living there. When Gaddafi was the leader of that country, women had great status in that country, great positions, great jobs, great everything. They were respected. And the people, the country had the highest per capita income of any country in Africa because he protected the resources for the people. They received the money. He had such things in his green book where if you're a citizen of Libya, you don't have to worry about having a place to live. That should not be something that people have to be concerned about, is paying rent. You know, I mean, no one even bothered to recognize what we destroyed in Libya. Her comment, Hillary Clinton's comment, was after when someone asked her about how he was brutally assassinated, we came, we saw, he's dead. Ha, ha, ha. You know, what kind of woman principles are those? I mean, I don't understand it. What is the difference if a man was there? What is the difference if a woman is there, if that's the way we're going to operate? It seems like the women who have been successful in this military-industrial complex are women who do things the same way the men do.
Pretty much, doesn't it seem that way? Yeah.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't make sense to me.
I know.
That's ridiculous. Bernie Sanders is bringing up the issues. When he said what he said last night about, what's his name? I always call him Poindexter, but Kissinger.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah. That was right on. You know, why is he...
What exactly did he say about Kissinger? Well, I did not listen to
Hillary.
Oh, this is brilliant.
Hillary talks about Kissinger like, you know, he advised her and he's a good advisor to her.
Oh, there's great pictures of her and him hugging.
Right, you know, and Bernie said, I don't want... Why would anybody want to tout that as something to be proud of?
As if he wasn't a mass murderer.
Right.
Oh, kind of like Madeleine Albright. Wait a minute. I'm getting a picture.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Francis.
You guys take care.
Thanks.
And,
bases are loaded.
I think Bernie is trying to let us know that our vote will count if we all stand up and say something and say we got to do this different. You know, let's do it different.
Hey, thanks Hopefully very much for your call, Francis.
Take care.
You too. 503-231-8187. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
We are Positively Revolting.
We hope you are too.
And we are here until 9 o'clock with you on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. And you are listening now because, in fact, we are on the air due to listener support. If you are a member of KBOO, we thank you for being a member of KBOO. If you are not yet a member of KBOO,
it's so easy to remedy that situation.
Become one of those listeners that actually support us and keeps the lights on. You can go to kboo.fm and actually take care of that little issue right now.
This very second.
That's right. Also, you can follow along during the week because once a week is not enough. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. Like our page and follow along with all of the fine articles that we find and post and share with each other in a commenty kind of way. Also on Twitter, you can find us @positiverevolt. There. We're I've all said all of that. 503-231-8187. And good morning, Tim. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm calling, well, I have two things. Once during the 80s, I went to Chile during the Pinochet regime. And Kissinger had been responsible, along with others, of course, to set that coup up.
Yes, he did.
So I saw firsthand the results of his work. And when I was there in Chile, of all the countries I'd been to in South and Central America, I had never, ever experienced a population living in such fear and terror as the people, especially in the Santiago area, the capital. And no one would talk to us. We always would go to the artists and the musicians and the shopkeepers, you know, the poor people.
Mm-hmm.
And even they were terrified to speak to anybody,
mm-hmm.
the spies in the street. And if you were overheard saying anything, even a little thing, against the regime or Pinochet, you'd be dead and disappeared and dead in a matter of hours. It was a horrible, horrible feeling. And I'm for Clinton to align herself with that kind of a butcher. And
like it's okay.
Yeah.
Like it's a good thing.
Well,
that's very telling. I mean, it is revealing.
Yeah. It's revealing.
And one thing I've noticed with the Republicans is the pandering has reached a new supersonic level that I've never seen before. There seems to be a little less of that, except perhaps Hillary is so disconnected that she has no idea that people might perhaps have a problem, that some people may perhaps have a problem
with Kissinger and Albright
and their policies, which she simply
doesn't have a problem with.
I know, because
frankly.
Because
we can look at her record as Secretary of State in the imperialist wars that we've been having.
Yeah, kind of that.
I'm just going to put that out there.
Well, the other thing is I have no problem at all voting for a woman for president, and I would like to see a woman for president, but not Hillary. I mean, if there's only her and the Republicans to choose from, I'll vote for Hillary. But I want Barney. Barney is the
Bernie.
Only the hope.
You mean Bernie?
Bernie, excuse me. I keep saying
so close.
Barney.
I know.
Bernie. Hey. Yeah,
or Larry David, Bernie. Whoever.
And, you know, not that I wouldn't want the Greens, but the Greens, I never even hear of the Greens. I mean, you never hear of any events or...
You know, I'm gonna put it out there and say there's probably reasons you don't hear about the Greens. They don't get a lot of coverage.
The Greens, I'd be having all my guys out there organizing.
Oh, I think we lost you. Okay, we're gonna move on, and we are going to let's talk to Mimi. Good morning, Mimi. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for this show. I saw something last night on MSNBC. I was going to put on Rachel Maddow, and it was right before her show. I think I forget who it is. Chris Matthews, but this other guy. Anyway, he says
her baby brother. He looks like her baby brother.
Yeah, that guy. So he says, I was really pretty blown away. What are these people angry at anyway? That was his question, because he was listening to
what people?
Hillary. I guess us people. He's referring to Hillary and Bernie both saying, you have a right to be angry. And his whole trip last night was, angry about what? Things haven't been this good in so many years, and his two guests who are on are all, you know, talking about in praise of Obama, and the other guy about, you know, like economics and how great everything is. And there's not one mention about any injustice that's going on for, you know, whether it's immigrants, whether it's the black community, whether it's women, whether it's rape, whether it's, you know, nothing. And I was so... I don't know why I'm still blown away by this when I see three white men talking and wondering what the world is angry about.
Because you just can't help it. I know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm with you there.
Yeah.
I just wanted to call in to say this is so prevalent. And, you know, this attitude of what are you so angry about? coming from the white majority.
Totally.
And yes, the white male majority.
You got an hour?
Yeah.
We could scratch the surface. All I wanted to do was just voice that because I was really blown away.
No, thank you, Mimi.
Morning, and yeah, that was it. So thank you, and I'll be listening.
Thanks so
much. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
So one of my favorite commentators on many things is Jessica Williams. She is a fake reporter and a true comedian on The Daily Show.
I love her.
I do too. So she was apparently, I'm reading from an article, on a roll last night with a segment about the sexist back and forth between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton supporters. After an on-point joke about Tinder message and literally voting with her vagina, Williams tells Noah, who is the host of the Daily Show, "Yeah, the sexism is annoying, but it's the women shaming each other that is the most upsetting. It is so diminishing for women to accuse other women of voting for Hillary just because she's a woman." And so Noah says, "So you agree with Hillary supporters?" And she says, "No, both sides are being straight up booty right now. It's diminishing for women to tell other women that they're obligated to vote for Hillary because, you know, we all have vaginas." Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you, Jessica.
I wanted to also mention, you know, Mimi was talking about, you know, this curiosity about why people are angry. Yesterday, something interesting happened.
Well, that guy has a job.
Yesterday, something interesting happened. Dozens of demonstrators advocating for a $15 minimum wage actually made their way through the glass doors of the Union Ballroom in the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee's campus and into a large makeshift media workspace set up for Tuesday night's Democratic debate, taking their cause to the heart of the nation's political reporting core. This is from an article found on Yahoo News. But, you know, the fact that the 15 Now campaign is national, the fact that there is the poverty issues that are so stunning and crippling for so many people in this country. Why are we angry? How is 15 Now not actually headlines? You know, that this is something that we are all striving for, in that way of, let's make the world a better place for us. Let's make it more livable. Let's actually make it sustainable to raise a family and actually give people some human dignity. Oh, because that doesn't serve the establishment. I forgot. So let's, you know, take some heart in the fact that some people are jumping into the fore and trying to make some hay while the sun shines, as my daddy would say.
And as we're taking heart, let's talk about what's coming up this morning on KBOO. At 9, Democracy in Motion is off. Instead, we'll hear MOVE activists Pam and Mike Africa on MOVE, Past, Present, and Future. We'll also hear an excerpt from the annual dinner tribute to Black political prisoners and their families with keynote speaker Lynn Stewart. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. And at 10:15 on Flashpoints, host Dennis Bernstein discusses lead poisoning and corporate greed and the surrender of the last Malheur occupiers to the feds. At 11, the digital divide is off today. We'll hear Radio EcoShock on climate and misunderstood impacts. And once again, folks, thanks for members for your continuing support. Not a member, you can become one easily by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate today, as we've said earlier, and we'll say again. I have a feeling.
We will. Say it early and often. Let's go ahead and talk to Mary. Good morning, Mary. You're on the air.
Hey, Mary.
So, I won't vote for Hillary Clinton because she's a woman, or for any woman just because she's a woman. I'm going to look at the issues and what they stand for and the person.
Thank you, Mary.
Best judgment. Yeah, you're welcome. One of the things, this may have already been said, I'm able to listen and not listen, but I thought something very telling last night in the debate was when they asked about government waste. And Hillary Clinton's first answer was they could find, you know, certainly find things in the area of, say, education and so on. Isn't our education budget something like 2%?
Like nothing? Something like nothing. Almost nothing? Yeah. Yes.
And Bernie Sanders did bring up, I was very happy finally to hear something about the defense budget. And the defense budget is huge. there's what is stated, what is unstated, and yes, it's not audited, but it is most of our budget. And, you know, that's a travesty, and that's the big elephant in the room, that if you are going to get money, yeah, you can tax Wall Street, and you should. Wall Street's a big part of that whole defense spending. Another thing I wanted to mention was it's important to remember that Hillary Clinton, she is the war-mongering candidate. She did support the coup in Honduras, and yes, she's buddy-buddy with Henry Kissinger, which says a lot. She's also, she was a Goldwater Republican. And, you know, I am so ready to vote for a small D Democrat. I don't know about anybody else, but we haven't had a true Democrat in a long time when the Democrats were in the White House, though we have good people who are, I think, Democrats serving in Congress.
Well, the Clintons were very much part of corporatizing the Democratic Party.
The Clintons, were, you say?
Yeah.
I believe that's true.
And yeah, we can look at
a long time ago.
And I don't, I'm somebody who really doesn't want to lump couples together, and I do think that couples can think separately and individually, though I gotta say, in the Clinton administration, there is a whole lot of Hillary coming to the floor and actually giving her opinions and talking about working sort of as a team. So, you know, I don't necessarily want to damn her with her husband's policies, but she sure didn't speak out against them at the time. And I'm going to say that his omnibus crime bill and the Telecommunications Act were two of the worst pieces of legislation we saw in the 90s that have gotten us into the mess we're in 30 years later,
oh
20
my
years
gosh,
later.
For so many people.
NAFTA?
Can I say one more thing about Gloria Steinem? And you're right on about Madeleine Albright. I mean, how horrific the support of the sanctions in Iraq and all of the people, men, women, children who were hurt by that. I'm old, so I used to subscribe to Ms. Magazine when it first came out.
Me too.
You know, I liked Gloria Steinem, and I think I still do, and I think everybody can make comments that they wish they hadn't said. And I think she's a good person.
You know, she dated Henry Kissinger. I'm just going to say that. I don't want to, like, people can be independent and whatever, but I just got to say, whoa, really? Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, okay.
I'm backing off.
Yeah, no, that's good. but anyway, after taking, you know, my roots are working class, and I didn't even know I was working class until I met my husband, but Gloria Steinem and Ms. Magazine, I read that for a long time, took it for a long time, and then somehow at some level, maybe not a very conscious level, I realized it really wasn't a magazine that spoke to me or my issues that much. Women's rights, a right to choose, and so on, yeah, probably a lot. Maybe I'd have to go back and read those issues, but sometimes that whole glass ceiling thing, I feel like it's just more of the same, where a certain percentage of people get to the top.
Exactly. You know? We call that liberal feminism, and it does not serve us well. It absolutely ignores intersectionality. It talks about, basically, you know, if we just created this equal playing field, women can be as successful as men in the same corporate structure that will leave so many people out.
Yeah.
Right.
Kind of like anyone can get to the presidency.
It's a lot like that.
Yeah, if they just work
hard
enough.
It's a lot like that.
Thanks. Great.
Hey, Mary, thank you so
much. Thanks
a lot. All right, and 503-231-8187, the number to call. I believe next we have Mary Jane. Good morning. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning, ladies. Thank you for being positively revolting, and get those hell door open. I'm coming in. my gosh.
It'll be a grand party.
Yes, it will be. There'll be plenty of us there, but I don't have any of the technology stuff. Listen to KBOO and radio. So thank goodness, I'd probably blow up my idiot box so I don't see all the pictures of everybody.
It's good for your blood pressure.
Yes. I just had to drink my Hemp Pro here to get some protein for the day. Hemp Pro is good. But what I want to say, yes, Kissinger has been in the background for many years, all the wars since the beginning, since he got into the... he's Vietnam, El Salvador, over in the Middle East. There's a movie called The Fog of War about McNamara.
Yeah.
It's, have you ever seen that?
Oh,
well,
yeah.
I'll put it out there to people to watch it. It's amazing. And to educate yourself a little bit, I like to do the history stuff, know what's going on, see their tears of grief after when they're about ready to die. And Kissinger's in the background of a lot of the wars, you'll see that. But I voted for Obama the first time, but when I found out about his religious drone meetings, I could not in good conscience vote for him the second time. So I did vote for Dr. Jill, and I know there is not any coverage about her, but that needs to be changed. We do have other parties in existence, and I don't care if it's a woman either. I want somebody to be justice. Do justice and peace for everybody, everybody internationally, since we're all connected, we're all of the human race, and that, and I'm sorry, I get so upset. I know I've called a few times, and I just go on and on, but I just want to put my two cents, and I'm going out the door, and
all right.
Thank you, ladies, for being there and being positively revolting.
It's our pleasure, and thanks for being positively revolting yourself, and, you know, I think it is just such an important thing to underscore. You know, that politics as usual is really, it's leaving so many horrors on the table. The war machine, the military-industrial complex,
like advertising.
The system of mass incarceration in the prison-industrial complex, which is really, if you think about it, a new form of slavery, because we have prisoners working to profit private companies and make well less than minimum wage. We incarcerate more people than any other country on the planet. Think about that.
Well, don't you think that it is to me, it is like advertised. It is presented in the traditional media, in the mainstream media, as another advertising. They are advertising the candidates. There are no issues discussed.
Mm-hmm.
These very important things that you were just talking about are not even mentioned. It's advertising.
And yet they are actually getting out there this time, but only pretty late in the game, considering how long this has already been droning on. I love the idea. Australia has a 6-week campaign, if I'm not mistaken.
Most countries have a very short
campaign. And the fact that we started this about a year ago and we're just getting to the actual primaries, I'm already like, oh my God, so done. And yet now we are starting to hear about some interesting responses. Like, I've never heard a mainstream candidate say that they would go for the release of 500,000 incarcerated people in their first term. I've never heard anyone actually give that lip service in a mainstream party before. Third parties, yeah, I maybe have heard stuff like that. But I find it fascinating that actually did get some coverage yesterday. And maybe people can start thinking about, wow, why do we have a couple million people in jail? What's that about? And who's that serving? That would be some good thought.
Should we get one more caller?
Let's do it. Good morning, Linda. Excuse me, you're on the air.
For your show this morning, I wanted to bring up the phrase we used to use, at least I used in the late 60s and early 70s, and that was women's liberation. We didn't talk about feminism so much, not that it didn't exist. The authors had been there before. But the women I knew were radicals, and we talked about women's liberation because there was no real liberation of women unless we talked about all women, and we needed to be liberated from all forms of oppression. Do you think when a female drone operator sends a bomb that kills people in a village that is any less horrendous? It is not. There's no, the kind of elite feminism would say that becoming a member of the armed services to carry out imperialist war is an advance for women. It's not an advance for women.
Thank you.
It does, because it's in service of oppressing women all around the world for an oligarchy, you know, or a ruling plutocracy that's now global. So when people talk about Hillary Clinton, I will paint her with a similar brush. I do think she and her husband have been very consistent in their policies and in what they've spoken. And let's look at welfare reform.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at all of the women. And the average woman on welfare at that time was a white woman who had an average of 1.5 children and was on for just over a year. And yet the Clintons allowed the press and the media to portray usually a minority woman with 8 children driving a Cadillac.
Ah, the welfare queens, yes.
And they knew very well because the audits are done and they're independent audits about fraud. And my mother worked for the Welfare Administration. That this was not, this is all fabrication. And that what it really is a helping hand. As my mother used to say, and as women liberationists used to say, we were all just one paycheck away from being on the street, one man's paycheck away from being on the street, and we all deserved a helping hand. She put, you know, there's nothing in Hillary that is about the liberation of all women. She's about protecting an oligarchy and having a women feminist elite within it.
You know, I got to say, I'm really glad that you mentioned the women's liberation viewpoint, because that really was my early indoctrination in politics. And I have never been able to figure out, it never has made sense to me, the liberal feminism that advances, you know, the same system, the same absolutely corrupt and broken system that oppresses us all. As, you know, we just got to get better at playing that game, and we got to level the playing field in that game so that we can be just as murderous, imperialist, and deceitful and corrupt as guys.
Well, and let's look at mass incarceration. You don't think that every one of those men, that because it was directed more at men, we know that, in terms of the population in the prison, you don't think every one of them doesn't have a mother, a sister, a child, a lover? We are always involved in what happens to the men in our lives. We cannot separate ourselves out when we're talking about real liberation. I don't know women who don't have some male. My son, if you kill my son, am I going to be okay? No. So these policies that oppress people around the world do not ever liberate women.
Right, you are. That's a great place. That is a great place to end that, Linda. Thank you so much for calling us today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
And there we are, just about a couple minutes before the end of the show. I don't know. Do we have time to squeeze in, Aaron? What do you think?
Why not?
Good morning. Oh, Aaron went away. All right. So there we have it. Identity politics, the complexities of our lives, intersectionality, liberation for all, or just, you know, kind of a more comfortable world for some. What are we really going for? What are our priorities? I want to also just note about, like, really totally sexist coverage of the campaigns. I'm going to say
Yeehaw.
What I think about any candidate, in that I don't oppose or endorse anyone on the air kind of way, is really to the side. But the sexism in the coverage is kind of galling. And I think it's really important to check that out. I also think that it's absolutely damning of our system that we cover the biggest election as if, you know, if voting actually did matter, then I'd be even more upset. But because I'm not actually convinced it does, then I'm going to say it's fascinating to watch mainstream media cover the presidential election like it was a horse race.
As I have said all morning.
Yeah. You have indeed. And it's just like, you know, you're going to back the winning team? Who's going to be the winner? Are you going to win or lose? You know, it's like, what the hell? Are you electable? Is this person electable? What makes you electable? Well, it's certainly not where you stand on the issues. Apparently, it's, you know, how big your purse strings are, you know, how much you can support the establishment. Can you step on everyone else to support the establishment even more? I mean, I'm just, I'm appalled. I'll leave it there.
Yes. Then there's the system within the system about how delegates happen, and we don't even want to go into that because it is 8:58. And new things are going to, please stay tuned for the rest of the amazing programming here on the Radio Zine on KBOO. We'll be Positively Revolting next week again.
Oh, yes, we will. There ain't no stopping us.
There comes a time. Cast your vote.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 9 a.m. And coming up, Democracy in Motion is off this week. Instead, we'll hear MOVE activists Pam and Mike Africa on MOVE's past, present, and future. We'll also hear an excerpt from the annual dinner tribute to Black political prisoners and their families with keynote speaker Lynn Stewart. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, followed at 10:15 by Flashpoints. At 11, the Digital Divide is also taken this week off, and we'll hear Radio EcoShock on climate misunderstood impacts. And thank you to all the KBOO members for your continuing support. If you're not currently a member of the KBOO Foundation, you can correct that oversight at kboo.fm. Just click where it says donate today. And now, this.